everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing new ideas, concepts, guests, to help you lead a more positively minded life. And nothing makes it more difficult to lead a positively minded life than hating yourself. You know, hating easy other people, that's easy. That makes you feel like there's something right about you and something wrong about them. Hating yourself, tough act. One of the things that we look at and we've been researching and comes to my attention by a good friend and associate, Dr. Jeremy Spiegel, is about body dysmorphia. Body dysmorphia, an interesting word. A body dysmorphia is when you're preoccupied with one part of your body, and it's a defect. Perfectionists, people who tend to be perfectionistic, tend to focus on one part, but other people do as well. Jeremy, let's talk about body dysmorphia.
Body dysmorphia is where something is just not right. It is not right about a body part, say. And oftentimes, other people cannot notice or discern that there is a problem with, say, your nose or some other part of your body. But the sufferer of body dysmorphia is convinced that not only is there some irregularity, some defect, but it is so hideous, it is perceived as so hideous, that this will prevent normal functioning in life. That is to say, somebody might hole up in their apartment because of this glaring defect that only the person can see.
For it to be called body dysmorphia, it's got to cause distress, significant distress.
Absolutely.
I mean, you just got to can't say, you know, I hate my ears, and then go on through the rest of your life wearing a good haircut. But you have to obsess about it. You have to think about it and make you very unhappy, and it stops you from social functioning, stops you from earning your living in some way, mm-hmm. stops you from going out. Body dysmorphia could be anything. Could be anything from finding your breasts looking ugly to your hair. Well, Linda, what are some of the most common, Linda Vanell's with us today, the most common places where people focus on body dysmorphia?
Well, the research shows us that skin is the highest. 73% is skin. 56% is
73% hair. 73% is what of skin?
73% of the patients that were looked at through research from Dr. Catherine Phillips noted that that skin was among the first and the most important, the most prevalent among the patients, that they were concerned about their skin. The second being hair. 56%, the third being weight, and the fourth being nose. So in that order of severity, that would be the most common noted.
Just run down the list of the different things that people focus on.
Okay, after the nose, we have...
Forget the percentages, just run down the nose.
We have toes, we have abdomen, we have breasts, body build, facial features, face size or shape, lips, buttocks, waist, genitals, cheeks, cheekbones, calves, height, head size, mouth, back, fingers, neck, shoulders, knees, and ankles.
Wow. Somebody finds each of these so ugly, so unattractive, that it stops me from living.
Yes. And the focus on a particular body part or body parts in this way stops you from thinking about other things. There's no room in your mind to maybe consider the beauty of a flower or something outside of yourself. You're constantly... This is a preoccupation. A preoccupation.
That's a nice word for it, too, because, you know, it's a preoccupation. It's a pre-everything. It gets in the way of everything mm-hmm. in some way. It's like many phobias... You know, it's like many obsessions, this thing, but the thing about this is the thing you hate is yourself. It's not about fear. It's a fear. It's a hatred of self and a part of yourself. Mm-hmm. I've known people who have tried to cut off body parts that they've found ugly, you know, and they found it. Now, you work in a couple of psychiatric institutions where you've seen it as it's, at its most severe as Jeremy.
Yes, absolutely.
How severe does it get?
Well, it has the potential of being what is called delusional. There's almost a delusional proportion. In some cases that I've treated, the person was frankly delusional. That is to say, it crossed that line, that threshold beyond where you're dissatisfied with its appearance, and then it takes on in this larger quality. The person does nothing else but touch, say, the nose in one particular case, so much so that all of life drops out. It's not just some impairment in social or occupational functioning. There is none. There is no social or occupational functioning. All of life becomes reduced to readjusting a nose that actually was probably reasonably fine to begin with, but then over time became damaged, actually, with cartilaginous damage in the nose from incessant adjustment by manually, or that person using their hand to adjust. And it can be absolutely devastating.
One of the interesting things here is that there are people who you could see in public. I'm trying to think of that one singer, Lyle. What's Lyle's last name? The country western singer.
Lyle Lovett.
Lyle Lovett,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You look at Lyle Lovett. Yeah. Lyle Lovett is unattractive by all standards. He is not a handsome man.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But he's beautiful. See? Beautiful enough to get, what's her name, to marry him, right? And fall in love with him. Beautiful enough on so many levels. Mm-hmm. Is it just his voice? Mm-hmm. Or does it have nothing to do with your appearance? If you have a certain appearance and a certain carriage and a certain personality, somebody's going to see past it.
Yeah.
And the people who don't see past it may need you to be beautiful so that they could be beautiful. Like you're afraid to be with somebody unattractive because it embarrasses you, right? Or you're afraid to be with somebody attractive. But generally, anybody could get loved. Mm-hmm. So now comes the question as to why this exists. And we're going to explore today body dysmorphia, your like and dislike of your own body. But we're going to start with an interesting method we developed. The three of us have all run groups over time, both support groups and therapy groups. The difference between a support group and a therapy group is in a therapy group, the therapist is actively involved in helping to adjust and make changes among the thinking of the group members. In a support group, the therapist is not actively involved, but giving them the space to talk to each other so that somehow the commonality will help them feel safer and grow. So, for example, AA, support group, right? Or ACOA, a support group. These are support groups. So we want to present a support group of three people who have got body dysmorphia, and we're going to present that, we're going to play those roles, and let you hear what would sound like and kind of feel like, right? So you're entering a room, and in this room, there's this meeting of three people with body dysmorphia. Jeremy has an obsession with his nose. I have an obsession with my hair. Linda has an obsession about her skin. All right, let's go to it. Mm-hmm. So Jeremy, what's this thing about your nose?
It's not obvious to you. I have possibly the worst nose imaginable.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to describe it? I'll tell you that it's misshapen. I mean, there's something. It's asymmetrical. The nostrils are like one is an almond shape. The other is more of a pecan. It's too Jewish. I don't know how to describe it. I mean, for me, it's the most painful curse. The curse, like a cancer on my face, I hide from.
Well, it doesn't look that bad to me. I mean, my hair is a horrible thing, but your nose looks all right.
You know, you sound like my mother. What are you looking at? You know, you're fine. You know.
No, I don't say you're fine.
Well, wait a minute, guys. You know, your hair and your nose. What about my face? You know, my face is so distorted, you know, with my acne and my skin on my face is, you know, so obvious. You know, it's bad that my skin on my hands and my arms, but the skin on my face is just so ugly. It makes people not want to look at me.
What's the matter with your skin?
Even when I push my hands on the counter someplace, look at it. It's distorted. The color is dry and it's scaly and it's so ugly. The color, I want to hide and put gloves on my hand. I don't know where to put my face. I kind of want to put my hood on all the time because I feel that there's something with my skin. I know it. Look at it.
I'm looking at it. It's really hard to appreciate that there's a problem there.
Well, what do you mean? How could you not see it?
Look at my forehead.
It's all like it's just discolored.
At least you have a forehead. Look at me. I've got no hair up here. I used to have hair. You know what I mean? And I got this bald head now.
Well, you know, that...
I mean, how do you think people feel about walking around and seeing my hair? My hair's falling out. My hair is ugly. It's a bad color. Mm-hmm. It's all of that. And it's always been like that. And it embarrasses me. I've got the worst hair of any human I've ever seen.
But you could put a hat on it and that would cover it.
Yeah,
you know?
but I'm covering it up all the time. How do you think anybody's going to feel when they meet me and I take off my head? I feel like George Costanza. You know what I mean? They'll feel like, you know, suddenly they're going to look at me and they're going to say, ugh, look at that man.
Yeah, but you know, like with my skin, it almost makes me feel like I have a disease. You know, like every place I go, I always feel like I've put my hands in my pockets and my face. I always want to cover it because I feel people judge me. I feel like they see me as dirty. Like, you know, it's just a
That's the same feeling.
Awful
feeling. That's the way it feels. Mm-hmm.
Terrible. I don't. Mm-hmm. I find myself like not wanting to go out.
You know what's really, I'll tell you something, what's really difficult is having this thing in the center of your face. I mean, you're with the hair. Listen, I agree. You've lost some hair, but it's age appropriate. And you know, as somebody who has testosterone in their body, they ultimately lose their hair. It's a natural thing. I, on the other hand, I have this thing that is the center piece of what people's eyes go to when they meet me for the first time. And in fact, you remember when there was SARS? You know, often if you see images of Japan or China, you might see somebody wearing a surgical mask just walking around. I wish so badly that we had this this practice here in the U.S. where if you have a cold, you wear a surgical mask. I would wear a surgical mask every day if it were if people didn't comment on it.
Once again, you do have you have an opportunity to actually cover yourself, you know, whether it be with a mask or something. But again, like with my skin, I always feel that no matter where I go, people almost feel sorry for me. I feel that they look at me like with disdain, like they don't know whether it's I'm dirty or that I have a disease or so I feel like I shy away from people.
There's something about this dirty that sounds familiar because, you know, even with my hair, I feel like people would kind of throw me away, discard me. Do you get that feeling? You get that feeling, Jeff? Like that?
I feel like people wince when they look at me.
Wince. Mm-hmm.
They wince. They wince out of
pain.
Pain. And I want to disappear and go so far away that I just couldn't be found.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, me too. Even like in the morning, I look at the mirror and I think maybe I should just get rid of the mirror. It's like I see it all the time on my skin, and I wake up in the night and I think maybe there's some other kind of lotion. Although I keep trying all different kinds of things, and you know whether it's the gloves in the winter or you know some kind of lotions in the summer. Is it dry? Is it oily? I'm almost too embarrassed. I keep asking people to you know help me, but now I feel like people almost think I'm, you know, ridiculous, you know, that I keep asking people and buying all of these lotions and going to the cosmetic and trying to find these different foundation to color, to make my skin different on my face and my hands. But it's a curse. I feel.
I know the curse. And, you know, I'll tell you something. it feels really good to hear you talk about it, because you and Jeremy both, you know, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. It's so shameful.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since I was a kid, they made fun of me.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and it's so hateful that sometimes I just wish I were dead. Sometimes I just wish, like, you know, maybe I'll come back as somebody with the right kind of hair. Did you ever get that feeling?
Yeah, like, I do. I do. I know.
It's a curse.
Yeah, I do. I feel like it is a curse. And I, you know, I don't play sports. I never undress in a locker room. Never. I've never done that. Because the thought that people would look at me with disgust, you know, ugh, it's...
The problem, in my view, is that, I mean, you've got it made, the both of you.
How?
Well, first of all, the hair. Look, you could wear a hat that's socially acceptable. Your skin... Try some moisturizer. I can recommend some.
I've tried everything.
I'll try some. Maybe you haven't tried something I'm using. But look, here's the thing. As far as the nose, my nose changes. My nose changes. Different angles. I look at it in the evening in the mirror. I look at it in a reflective surface on the side of my building. And it changes. It goes from pointy to it looks fat on one day. And then it looks like it's a kind of a hungry nose. The next day, I can't keep up with it. I'm thinking about not just today, but how is it going to look next week?
Yep,
how
too.
Is it going to look
if
I get hit with something? I think about that a lot.
Mm.
I think about what will happen. I mean, it's as terrible as it is now. It could get that much worse.
That's the worst part. Thinking about, okay, if it's bad now, what's it going to be like?
Yeah, well, with me, every season it changes too. Sometimes it gets drier. Sometimes it changes. So now I have to.
Well, do you think about the future?
Well, sure, because winter's coming and it's going to get dry, and then I get it's like itchy all the time, and and then the summer to come, and then getting undressed again in that bathing suit. I never take my clothes off because everybody looks at my skin. And it just feels ugly. I know people are almost laughing at me when I change into a bathing suit. It's they must say, what is that skin disorder? So when people look at me, I feel like they must be wondering in their mind, you know, what's wrong with her? Doesn't she know that there must be some cure or you know?
Everybody wants to give advice, right?
Oh,
you
got to
do this for your hair. You got to do this for your
nose.
Sure,
like you just, Jeremy. Like you want to give me a lotion?
Surgery. They're going to do things for your nose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very difficult. I'm glad to have met you two guys because it makes me feel a little better about. I feel so lonely with this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, people don't really understand this at all. And everybody that I don't listen to anybody anymore because no matter who they are, they say, "What's wrong with it?"
Mm-hmm. In your imagination,
they don't see. They don't. They can't see it.
They're
lying.
Therapists and doctors, right?
They don't understand. They don't know because they don't have it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Oh. That was quite beautiful. This is Armand DeMille with you, who likes his hair, and Linda, who likes her skin, and Jeremy, who likes his nose. But we're here to, we wanted to show you what it must be like on the inside. Now to take you to, we'll push it out a further step. I'm going to let you hear something that I have from a long time ago, which is where this becomes to the silly point, but I'll let you hear that. And then we're going to come back and talk about it in a more serious way. Let me see. Here it is.
I used to think my right hand was uglier than my left. So I'd punish my right hand, not my left. I used to bite the knuckle of that hand, 'cause my right hand so much uglier than my left. Used to stick pins through the skin of that knuckle, my right hand was uglier than my left. Generally, I lacerated that knuckle because it was so guilty. I'd go out to a place that I know to eat, called Eat, and I'd sit there, sitting on my right hand, holding my left up, 'cause my right hand was so much uglier than my left. Now I know better. Both my hands are beautiful now. Look, hands! No more.
And, well.
Oh, my God. I don't know where you come up with this, Armand, this stuff.
Word Jazz by Ken Nordine. I don't know where it comes out of either, you know, out of the ethers. But that's a perfect one right there for you, isn't it?
It's incredible.
So we're talking about body dysmorphia. We're talking about disliking parts of your body to a point where it's hateful. And when we get a little later on today, we're going to show you what we think the cause of it is and what possibly could be done about it. But among the body concerns that seem to be the highest, the second biggest one on our list, is breasts. Linda, what did you find about it?
Well, in my work with people, I have often found that with women, there's a preoccupation with the breast, the size of the breast, the youthfulness of the breast, the sagging breast. So there seems to be a rather... almost over concern among the women that I have treated. And at times it's, you know, how my clothes fit me, how I look, how I'm attracted to others or others are attracted to me. And at times when I'm with young women, of course, you know, 10, 11, 12, when there's an early development of breasts, that there too is a preoccupation coming from either mom or other people around them, attention from the boys, so that we oftentimes have the breast being very much of, you know, of concern to women in female. So,
So women are concerned about their breasts, and they're concerned about the attractiveness, the size. And is this something that is, you know, it's hard for me as a man to think about it because it's like, you know, we've got this prejudice from the male side, which is a leaning towards wanting things to be a certain way and all this thing. But from the inside of women, I mean, is it, I remember reading that 8% or some major percentage of the women who get breast augmentation have psychological problems beforehand. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I do. The research shows that people who have undergone a breast augmentation have often suffered low self-esteem and have often come with frequent occurrences of depression. Many have attempted suicide, and so we have a history of some suffering of body dysmorphia. So that I'm not surprised to see that with breast augmentation, we would have another whole picture to look at.
Well, Jeremy, you know, a somatoform disorder, by definition, is one that has no clear medical link, right? And not necessarily has a deeper psychological link. Like, you know, there's not necessarily a person not paranoid, schizophrenic, or something like that. When they're really dysmorphic, we're talking about a specific part of the body that you're alienated from, and they have no physical, in somatoforms, you don't have any real physical reason for it.
That's generally true, yes. I mean, there are cases where maybe that there is some, say, slight deviation from the standard. Maybe there was an injury or something. And so, you know, there might be a slight bump in the nose somewhere that's undeniable to someone objectively looking at it. However, there is a disproportionate focus and time and attention spent considering the very nuances of shape and texture and what have you, such that it occupies a person's entire life. That's a problem. And so, I mean, if somebody comes and comes to me and they actually have a slight bump at the bridge of the nose that is plain to see, you know, you don't pretend that it's not there. Of course, I mean, there's something there. The question, though, is why does this register as hideous and unacceptable? And you know, that those are the questions that come up.
And sometimes you can do two questions. One is, I ask, and I try to find out who this part of the body was most connected to in childhood, your mother or your father. And you're going to find that there is somebody who has an investment in this part of your body. There is somebody who said to you when you were a little boy, I love to brush your hair. And then suddenly your hair starts falling out, and you suddenly, somewhere behind it, you feel the loss of a parent. You feel some drastic, terrible losses. So that's part of it. Part of what the therapy is to identify who the person is that may be identified with the part of your body that you're losing, you know, that you feel is disfigured or destroyed. And then there are so many ways that people spend their time dealing with it. And if you look on the internet and you look in the bookstores, a huge number of books are aimed at this kind of self-hatred. Dieting books, fasting books, shaping books, you know, stuff that's all about this is to try to find a way to correct those things that you find unattractive that are just part of being human. And it's okay to try to correct. It's okay to try to make it look better. But it's so much nicer to love yourself the way you are and then improve from there. So we're going to be taking a short break. We're going to come back and talk about this more. We're going to talk about some of the potential ways of getting around it. But we're going to want to hear from you at 212-209-2900 as well. 212-209-2900. An attempt to, a lot of times a person who is a, who has a body dysmorphic thing tries to turn people's attention away from them. They try to point at other things. They try to look at other things. They want you not to look at them. They have a sensitivity to being stared at. They will perceive being stared at. They have obsessions with plastic surgery and dermatologists. You know, I wonder what it's like to be a dermatologist who does these procedures on people who are clearly mentally bent, trying to get these different pieces fixed. Is a dermatologist somebody who by not a dermatologist, but a plastic surgeon who by nature of their definition of their profession without ethic? You know, I mean, go ahead.
I have an interesting response. I hope you think. You know, it used to be that in medical school, I stood up in front of the entire body class, and when we had a plastic surgeon in there, and he was showing us pictures of before and after, and the before, and it wasn't so much the images as it was his description.
Wait, we're going to have to take a break and come back to that. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and I'm sorry, Jeremy.
No problem.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with that professor. We'll be right back.
Look at that face. Just look at it. Look at that fabulous face of yours. I knew first look I took at it. This was the face that the world adores. Look at those eyes, as wise and as deep as the sea. Look at that nose, it shows what a nose should be. As for your smile, it's lyrical, friendly and warm as a summer's day. that face is just a miracle. Where could I ever find words to say the way that it makes me happy? Whatever the time or place, I'll find in no book what I find when I look at that face.
Look at that face, just look at it. Look at that funny old face of yours. When you first look, I took at it. You've got a face like a kitchen door. Look at those eyes. Look at that nose. That's where a good nose ends. As for your smile, spectacular. One grin would frighten the birds away. You've got a face like Dracula, and I mean that in the nicest way. To say that there's no one like you would not even state the case. No wonder I shook when I first took a look at that face.
Anthony Newley, Cyril Richard from Look at That Face. Powerful lyrics, because it says the way that it makes me happy, no matter what. What's the rest of it, Linda?
No matter the time or day, I'll find in no book what I find when I look at your face.
Yeah. So that's what happens. I mean, why do you think you know why people's eyes go bad as they get older? So that when they look at their partners, they don't see the wrinkles. It's like it keeps it softer. But even with the wrinkles and all, when you see older couples loving each other, they don't see the deformities. They don't see the bad parts. And if they do, they're hiding other stuff. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella and Jeremy. We're doing a show on body dysmorphia. And Jeremy Spiegel has worked with it quite a bit. We're talking about this. And Jeremy, you were in the middle of having somebody up on stage. And I was saying plastic surgeons are bums. And you were saying, oh, no, they're not. They do great work with burns. I understand that. But I'm talking about when you get somebody who has nothing wrong with their nose and you adjust it 7 times for them. That's the kind of person I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the difficulty, because when I was young in medical school and I had a professor that showed before and after pictures of various body parts, nose, face, so forth, you would have this professor who was a surgeon say, look how beautiful, you know, we've made this, and at one after another. And of course, I stood up in front of the class, and I said, almost like Socrates, what is beauty? What is beauty? And these sort of large questions. And so, you know, I took some umbrage at all this. Of course, as I've gotten older and I've had more experience, I feel differently now about even cosmetic surgery, in that, for example, I have known people who have gotten just a teeny tiny change, an eye lift, for example, where they just cut away a little bit of that redundant skin that happens over time, and they look 15 years younger, they're bright-eyed, I mean, they're, and what's more, is that their self-esteem explodes into improvement. Because they feel beautiful. But that's the end of it. See, this is the difference. For that person, that's it. That's the end of the story. What we're talking about is something different. We're talking about
You make a good point there. You know, of course, what they found with most of the I'm sure 90% of the breast augmentations, people are very, very satisfied with the result of it. Having larger breasts gets different attention, you know, and it's all been positive, 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 with some downside to it, of course. But the part of it that gets me is that it doesn't, you don't go the other way. So here's what Peter Hogan taught me. Peter was my mentor, and he said to me, whenever you've got a symptom like this, and here's the way you treat it, you ask a person, if you didn't have this problem, how would that change your life? So I'm going to use you two. I'm going to use Miss Skin and Mr. Nose, okay? If you didn't have this nose problem, right, of being the ugly nose, how would that change your life? Oh, just a first thought.
I could meet people. I could go out without fear and meet people and connect, and it would be such a relief. I can't even imagine the relief.
So the way you are now, Jeremy, and this is if I were treating Jeremy, I would say to you, the way you are now, whenever you meet anybody, you think they have a critical look at you.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't let yourself get close to them.
Exactly.
Because you can't trust them, because you know they're not telling you the truth, which is how ugly they find you.
Mm-hmm.
So some part of you, when you meet people, has to keep your guard up, and you can't let people in, no yeah. matter what they tell you. If you hire somebody who says, oh, you got a beautiful face, you know it's not true. So therefore, the way you are, Jeremy, nobody can ever love you.
Mm. Yes.
For as long as you have this belief about your nose, you are not lovable.
Well, would you want to love someone hideous?
No, here's the secret. Imagine that you didn't want to be loved. Imagine that you found somewhere early in life that being loved made you hurt more than being at a distance from people. Then by creating this perception, you could be safe for the rest of your life from anyone ever being so close to you that you would be that vulnerable, and that would be not such a bad strategy. So very often people who use things to keep people away are doing it because their wisdom says, I want to keep people away. Maybe you are better off alone. Maybe you can't stand the pain of an invasive love. You know, that stuff hurts loving. It makes you vulnerable. You're absolutely right. Much better you go out there and saying, I'm too ugly for them. What about you, Linda? Your skin, if you didn't have your skin, what would be the problem? What would you change?
Oh, my goodness. My life would be completely different. I could get a job. I would go to the beach.
What would happen at the beach?
I can imagine. Oh, I would sunbathe, and I would go in the water, and I would laugh with people.
And then what would happen as a result of you being at the beach and sunbathing, wearing a bathing suit, feeling good about your skin?
I'm sure I would meet other people. I'd have fun. I guess.
A man would be attracted.
Maybe,
to you.
Yeah. Of course, I would.
But the way you are now, you would never let yourself be with a man, would you?
Oh no, because I'm so ugly. He would not want. Who would want to be with somebody? I'm sure he thinks I'm diseased or something like that.
And it won't touch you.
Oh no, I wouldn't want anybody to touch me, because I would feel that they're thinking all the while that I'm just such an ugly creature. Like they almost feel sorry for me or something like that. Oh, I wouldn't want that at all.
So if I were Peter Hogan, I'd say to you, it seems to me that you must be very sensitive to the touch, that you have an extra sensitivity to your touch, that probably if somebody touches you, it melts you on the inside. And you got melted once, and you don't want to get melted again. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what you've done is you've built up a wall between you and the world that touches you. The skin, the largest area of your whole body, is protecting you from ever being touched. And that's pretty wise, Linda, because that must have been a very deep pain that you suffered. And when you're ready to take that risk of letting yourself be touched again, you probably won't see your skin the same way. But I fully understand, and I fully respect that you too may want to be a loner.
Mm-hmm, maybe.
212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there, you're on the air.
Hi, this topic is really it's really I'm just getting emotional. I was just getting emotional waiting on the line.
Sure. It touches you right to your heart, right?
Yeah, but one thing you just said, which kind of surprised me, is you said that it wasn't so bad being alone. But I remember in the past, in one of your shows, you were saying there is nothing worse. And you said it very firmly. You said there's nothing worse than wanting to be alone.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I didn't say there's nothing worse. There's a lot of things worse than wanting to be alone.
I thought that's what you said. You talked about a man whose wife had died, and he said, but I don't want to be alone. And you said, there's nothing worse.
Once you have had love and you lose somebody to you, the person who is alone, that's the worst feeling in the world.
See, I'm sorry,
To him, the person who is alone. No, being alone could be a beautiful thing for a lot of people. It could be a way of being. It could be people I know who just choose alone as their way of life. I don't like it because I think we're all part of a team. I think that everybody cooperates with everybody else and everybody enriches everybody else.
I'm like you, too. I kind of surround myself with people.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that this really affects me is I live in my fantasy world is really strong. I have a big hang-up about my chin.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew, it's funny because you were saying about what parent, and my mom has the same chin.
Okay.
And I don't want to be like my mom, and I think I've made up for, like I'm the opposite. I act opposite as my mother now.
And you act opposite her? Because now when you say your obsession about your chin, you don't like the shape of it, right?
It's really big.
It's a really big chin. It kind of juts out, it moves out.
Yes.
And do people talk about it?
They did in school. I'm married. My husband doesn't have a problem with it. But I have these, I think the way it affects my life is that I appear to other people to be spaced out, but I'm really fantasizing.
What are you fantasizing?
That I'm beautiful and that people are listening to me and that I'm getting emotional.
Uh-huh, please.
But, that I pick some celebrity and I fantasize that I'm that person.
You fantasize that you're the celebrity.
Yes.
And as a celebrity, when people talk to you, they don't notice your chin. Right? And they're loving you.
And that I'm beautiful.
And that you're beautiful. Even though you're beautiful to your husband, you know, that doesn't count as much, right? You want to be beautiful to the world.
Yeah, and I want to be, in my fantasy, I can be aggressive. In my real life, I think because my mother is very aggressive and because my chin makes me look pushy, I'm very agreeable to people. But
uh-huh.
Sometimes I don't say anything and I let people take advantage of me.
So what you've grown up with is by having this chin that makes people think that you can stick your chin out and be aggressive, you've had to take the opposite role.
Yeah.
And by taking the opposite role, by having such a great fear of being like your mother, you've had to back up, and now people can treat you ways that are badly for you. Now, let me ask you something about your mother. How do you feel about your mother? You say that you need her or don't need her.
Well, I live far away from, I moved away from, my parents are on the West Coast.
Yeah. Do you feel a need for your mother?
To be honest with you, I didn't realize this until recently. I'm really in my own head, and I don't think about reality very much.
Uh-huh. So you fantasize a lot.
Yes.
So some part of me is saying the following, okay? A reason that we stay attached to a symptom that is associated with one of our parents is because we need that parent, but we can't find a way to get close to them. So we either become the opposite of them or we become the same as them. What you're telling me is that some part of you is looking, yearning to find this kind of a nurturing form, but in the form of your mother or somebody else. My recommendation to you would be for you to find a very close association with a woman friend Now, do you have difficulty with women friends?
No, I have a ladies' group. I have a ladies' night where we in my neighborhood, where we go out, and I have friends there. But once again, I'm speaking to you now on the phone, but I'm very quiet with.
Yeah. So I would want you to have a therapist who is somebody who you don't have to be that way with, where you could test out your new way. Sounds like you're on the cusp of growing. It sounds like you're just about to change your old ways and step into a new way of being. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like you're right there.
I was going to go into therapist because, for different reason, you know how I told you I try to be agreeable? Uh-huh. And my husband is quite bossy, and it's getting on my nerves.
Sure.
We've been married for a while now, and I can't take it.
Well, that's what it means is you're tired of burying yourself, and that what's going to happen is you're going to come out naturally aggressive in response to his aggressiveness. But there's another step. There's another step, so you and he'll talk it over, you'll work it out. Odds are the two of you love each other and you'll go to the next place together. You're learning and you're growing. So find yourself somebody who is, look at my website, thepositivemind.com, find something that's agreeable to you. You've got your next step to take.
Thank
and I'm
you,
really
Jim.
Proud of you making this call, by the way. That's really putting yourself out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, I didn't know it was me. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
Hi. I've thought about calling before, but what you've described here is so me, so completely me, that I guess I had to call.
Hmm.
I mean, you guys were play acting.
Yes.
Know, skin and hair. But that was me. I mean, I lived at the dermatologist's office. Hmm. I couldn't even sleep on my back because I had such bad cystic acne. My face was covered that the doctor had to say to me, I had to decide what I wanted him to work on, my back or my face, because there wasn't enough time. My hair was kinky, completely kinky. And I mean, you know, I grew up in a time in the 50s when the page boy or the flip was in, and so I always wanted the straight hair, and there were a lot more things, too, that didn't fit in. So I felt like a freak. And you talked about not wanting to be seen and be on the beach and all that, and it was just me. I mean, before the season started, I used to hide on the beach because I actually spent my summers at the beach, but I'd hide before people would get to the beach, and I'd burn the crap out of myself because it was the only thing that even started to help me. And I mean, and you know, just all that and how I felt about a man seeing me and all that. So
it's been tough, huh?
Yeah.
But now,
I mean, I'm old now.
Now you're old, and something changed in you.
Yeah, something did. Menopause.
Okay, and well, this is very important. Because the menopause took away some of the energy that was mandating your connection. You didn't have to make the connection anymore. Now, when the connection became less desperate, you relaxed. You became less stringent.
Yeah.
And now you find connection, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I started to actually even before. I wanted it so badly. You know.
So how did you do it? How did you get over past your fears? Okay, so you said menopause is one part.
Well, that was later on, though.
Yeah.
Because I suffered with acne. It was adult, too. I mean, started when I was 13. The principal of the school called me out of the classroom to talk to me about it. I mean, I'm talking serious, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
How shameful, how insensitive they are.
They didn't mean any harm. They didn't
That's
know what
right.
was going on with me, you know? But it was a shock because I just thought I was doing something wrong again. You know, so it was a surprise when that's what they were talking to me about, and it really brought the awareness that much more to me, you know, that everyone could see. And people did make fun of me. People did laugh at me, because sometimes I had bandages covering giant boils on my face. And so, but I my first real love in my life actually took care of my skin. And, I mean, that was so incredible to me. That I completely fell for him. But when that fell apart, I had like a major nervous breakdown. I mean, that was the beginning And I didn't understand what was happening to me, but it did lead into a complete nervous breakdown. Because losing that one man who I felt so connected to, because he accepted me to that extent, you know?
Well, let me ask you one more problem about your family related to your disorders. Which parent? How did your father feel about it?
Forget about my father.
I don't want to forget about your father. Because you haven't.
My father never paid any attention to me. Never discussed anything with me of any.
And he found you unattractive and unappealing.
I don't know what he felt.
But for some reason, you felt like somebody had pushed you away. And he
yes,
had pushed you away,
I mean,
and you had no idea why.
I was very connected to my father when I was very young. But somewhere around my teenage early years, it's sort of like the missing link. Something changed, and I never knew what it was. But he also was a big drinker. He was an alcoholic.
But before him, and since we have a few minutes, so you had a father who suddenly turned on you just about the time that your sexual energy was coming around. Because it's interesting, because you mentioned menopause at the end.
Yeah.
So menses brought on the worst part of your life, the loss of your father.
Well,
then somewhere in the course of that, you find a man who is a nurturing, kind man who takes care of your skin and replaces this daddy, and he is for a moment a reprieve, and you feel like your life is so much better. And then you lose him, and you go back to the original loss, the loss of your father originally. And all of these seem to in some way impacted on your life, your childhood, your adulthood, your perception of yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're a grown lady. Now you're a person who says, okay, I guess I'm not going to find that daddy. I'm not going to find that mommy. I'm going to have to be a daddy and a mommy to myself.
Yeah.
Made a big step. You've gone a long distance.
Don't we all, I suppose.
What's your name?
My name is Sid.
Sid, nice to meet you, and thanks for calling in today.
Thank you for hearing me.
Sure, thanks for calling in.
All right, take care.
Jeremy, any final words? It's kind of amazing.
Well, it's amazing, these calls, and the how your heart goes out to the situation. And also, that we have something that is an objective problem. I mean, this is that there are such things as physical problems, but here you have a couple, at least for a time, where you had not just somebody could tolerate a skin condition in the other, in their lover, but to actually help it. I mean, help and nurse it. I mean, it's just beautiful. And you think about when you hear something like, oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, the clock. This is Armand DeMille with you with Linda Minella and the unstoppable Jeremy Spiegel. Hey, thanks, Jeremy. Thanks for bringing this to us today.
Thank you.
Linda, thank you, too. Thanks for Sean Rhodes. And we will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends, with more interesting stuff.